piles are ready. So they're just waiting for the structure to be built on top.
The stimulus money buys a new hospital for Nome. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 25th of February. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, oil executives push offshore drilling at a hearing in Congress.
What could we do to that area, which is open, what could we do to help move that forward would be an important question.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. It's never too early to set expectations and goals for your child's education. The UA College Savings Plan provides opportunities that can help you reach your educational savings goals. Save in Alaska, study anywhere. There's more information available by calling 1-888-4 and then Alaska. This message sponsored by the UA College Savings Plan.
Alaska's senators, along with bloggers and columnists around the country, are criticizing a portion of the Republican response to President Obama's speech last night. Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal included funding for volcano monitoring in a short list of stimulus projects he considers unworthy.
While some of the projects in the bill make sense, their legislation is larded with wasteful spending. It includes $300 million to buy new cars for the government, $8 billion for high-speed rail projects such as a magnetic levitation line from Las Vegas to Disneyland, and $140 million for something called volcano monitoring. Instead of monitoring volcanoes, what Congress should be monitoring is the eruption of spending in Washington, D.C.
Democratic Senator Mark Begich sent a letter to Jindal today, pointing out that volcano monitoring is a matter of life and death in Alaska. He described the near disaster in 1989 when ash from Mount Redoubt stalled all four engines of a 747 with hundreds of passengers on board. The plane only regained power after plummeting thousands of feet. Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski brought up similar points in a statement, but said it is legitimate to question whether funding for volcano monitoring should be included in a bill meant to stimulate the economy. Alaska senators may be from different parties, but they agree that President Obama gave a strong speech last night. Murkowski says it was a good mix of pragmatism and hope.
He didn't try to sugarcoat where we are in terms of the strength of our economy. He was very upfront in terms of what we're dealing with, the magnitude of it, that it's going to be difficult. But he also spoke with a level of optimism that we're Americans. We've been through some tough times, but we are innovators, we are hard workers, and we will come out on the other side of these economic troubles that we're in the midst of right now.
Democratic Senator Mark Begich says he approved of the trio of priorities President Obama laid out: energy, health care, and education. Begich says the energy component is especially important to Alaska.
I wish you would have mentioned, obviously, gas line as a form of clean energy. I know it's on his list of five. But just the fact that he talked about renewable energy, I think Alaska, in a lot of ways, is the collection of all of it. I mean, most states have certain concentration. Alaska has it all. I mean, we got geothermal, hydro, wind, solar, new technologies, you name it, we're doing it. And because of that, it gives us a great, I think, edge as an incubator for a lot of the new technology.
Congressman Don Young did not attend the speech and did not make himself available for comment afterward. A new hospital in Nome will be one of the first shovel-ready projects to benefit from the stimulus package. Senator Begich made the announcement yesterday. He says the hospital was one of two facilities in the country at the top of the Indian Health Services priority list. Begich says the construction work will start this summer, creating about 200 jobs.
Once completed, they'll employ full and part-time employment, about 450 people, which for the region is a huge employment. But also it brings quality health care to a region where they didn't have it or they had marginal health care. And what would happen is they'd have to come into Anchorage or to the larger hubs.
The hospital funding is welcome news to the Norton Sound Health Corporation. But as Paul Korchin from KNOM reports, it did not happen completely out of the blue.
Before those $787 billion federal dollars suddenly appeared on the nation's radar, the path toward a new hospital for the Nome region had been traveled in fiscal fits and starts. Designs on the facility began early this decade, but the initial vision proved to be unrealistic for an Arctic environment, and it was grossly over budget to boot. So NSHC hired a new planning team and went back to the drawing board, designing a less artsy and more functional facility that would stay within Indian Health Service funding parameters. NSHC's administration and board of directors also worked with Alaska's congressional delegation to keep the project afloat in the halls of Congress. A new Nome hospital was often at or near the top of the list, but snagging sufficient IHS monies proved elusive. Now, with the stimulus windfall, the funding conundrum has suddenly, almost miraculously, been solved. But as interim president and CEO Carol Piscoya says, NSHC had to do a lot of hard work to place itself in such an enviable position.
This is exactly what they call stimulus. Funding was just designed for something like this project. The gravel pad is complete and the pilings are in. So without those two former CEOs, we wouldn't be where we are today.
Piscoya assumed her new duties only on Tuesday, the very same day NSHC's stimulus money was announced. President and CEO Michael Lake resigned on Monday for undisclosed reasons after a year on the job. Prior to that, Trevor Colby had acted as the interim chief. Despite all the changes at the top, NSHC has managed to stay focused on its end game of replacing its aging hospital, parts of which are more than a half century old. The corporation serves Nome and 14 villages in the Norton Sound Bering Strait region. NSHC General Counsel Rick Helms indicates they were still plugging along toward a new facility before this week's announcement. But the new map from Washington, D.C. means an end to the money hunt.
It's because of our preparatory work and the assistance of the Denali Commission that's led to Norton Sound being eligible for this shovel-ready money, as they say. Currently, the corporation has an RFP out for steel fabrication. And so that's the next step, is the superstructure of the building. So rather than us going back to the Indian Health Service and others for additional monies, fortunately, this is exciting that 100% of the funding is available now.
NSHC aims to have its newly paid-for state-of-the-art hospital open for business in 2012. In Nome, I'm Paul Korchin.
The Palin administration today introduced legislation outlining the Department of Transportation's plan for road and infrastructure projects funded by the federal stimulus package. The bill includes $175.5 million for highways and roads in Alaska, but the legislature will have some $300 million in projects that it can consider funding. Besides the money the legislature must approve from the stimulus package, there are funding streams cities can tap into directly. Acting Anchorage Mayor Matt Klayman has announced an initial series of projects that fall under that category. KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
Overall, the city hopes to receive approximately $300 to $400 million in federal funding through ARRA. That's from the estimated $840-plus million anticipated for the state of Alaska. According to Acting Mayor Matt Klayman, the money Anchorage could receive will come via two streams. One passes through Juneau and then on to Anchorage. The other stream would go directly to the municipality from Washington. The first list of nine proposed projects announced yesterday fit the latter pattern. Coleman said they also fell within at least one funding category.
There's 70 different funding streams at least, and so you basically apply for funding from those funding streams for specific projects. So you have to match up, for example, a roads project with the funding stream for roads and a police project in the funding stream for police.
One of the projects proposed has already seen considerable shovel work, namely the Lake Otis Parkway and Tudor Road intersection. Another is set to go this construction season, repair and reconstruction of the Old Glen Highway between South Birchwood to Peters Creek. Also slated for submission to the U.S. Department of Transportation are rehabilitation of the Chester Creek and other area trails, people mover bus stop improvements in the university area, and people mover facility improvements. The municipality also expects $2 to $3 million from the energy efficient improvement category, again to augment existing projects. The administration distributed its first phase list about 10 o'clock yesterday morning. Anchorage Assemblymember Debbie Osiander says it was the first she learned which initial projects were selected.
My prime reaction is a bit of frustration that there was, again, no opportunity to discuss, to talk about what should be priorities, and to understand the parameters that were used to make these particular choices. The Assembly had requested the opportunity to do that twice, and these are not the projects that I would have immediately thought of.
Clayman says besides having already reviewed an overall list of possible projects, the administration has invited one member, Assembly Chair Harriet Drummond, to participate in the selection review meetings. He says he's also asked representatives of the school board, the railroad, and in the future may include Anchorage's nonprofit and for-profit community. But, Clayman says, there's not a lot of time for debate.
Most of these funds are going to be decided on and distributed in 6 months or less. If we spend days and weeks kind of debating which project should we apply for, we're going to end up getting no projects.
To help communicate the status of the city's Recovery Act proposals, the mayor says there's a new American Recovery and Reinvestment Act file on the municipal website. As of this morning, it was still in the initial stages of development. This is Len Anderson.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the village of Nikolski gets funding to complete a big wind power project.
We're going to be spread very thin, but we'll be very happy once it's over.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
The Department of Defense says three Alaska-based soldiers have died in Iraq. The three died of wounds suffered Monday in Balad when insurgents attacked their unit using small arms fire. The dead include Michael Main of New York, Michael Allman of Utah, and Zachary Nordmeyer of Indiana. All were assigned to the Stryker Brigade combat team at Fort Wainwright in Fairbanks. The Coast Guard successfully rescued four men from a grounded fishing vessel in the Aleutian Islands this afternoon. KUCB's Ann Hillman has the details.
The 58-foot icy mist ran aground around 4:30 this morning on Akutan Island, about 40 miles east of Onalaska. When the fishing vessel started taking on water in the remote area, they sent out a mayday call that was relayed to the Coast Guard through two other vessels. The Coast Guard first deployed an HH-65 helicopter from Onalaska, but the hurricane force winds were too strong for the chopper to safely hoist up the crew. Then two HH-60 Jayhawks from St. Paul arrived at the scene. After attempting to hoist the men from the ship around 10 a.m. this morning, the crews of the larger helicopters decided it was still too unsafe. The icy mist was moving around in 15-foot swells close to a cliff. Winds were blowing 80 miles per hour with gusts to up to 120. The four fishermen managed to safely get off of the ship and onto dry land. They walked up a hill, and the Coast Guard successfully hoisted them onto the helicopter and flew them to Onalaska. The Cutter Monroe was also on the scene to provide backup support in case the helicopters needed more fuel or needed help transporting the crew members. The fishermen reported no injuries. Chief Petty Officer Dana Warren said the icy mist is still in one piece on the western side of Akutan Island, but is still of concern.
It is a concern. The weather there remains severe, and it is a concern that the vessel may break apart. We hope it doesn't, and we hope that it's recoverable, but at this point, we can't really determine that.
The crew of the Icy Mist, who were fishing cod at the time of the incident, will be interviewed by the Coast Guard to try to determine why the ship began taking on water.
We are conducting an investigation. The interviews of the crew and the crew of the Icy Mist is part of the procedure and will be done, as well as to the vessel and finding out how much fuel is potentially on board and other potential environmental hazards if the vessel does break up.
The 58-foot fishing vessel is homeported in Kodiak and is owned by Bob Gunderson. The four crew members were Dan Oliver, 45, Clint Packer, 43, Kevin Fisner, 36, and Terry Meyer, 29. In Unalaska, I'm Ann Hillman.
The heads of America's most powerful oil companies urged Congress today to open up more of the country's coast to offshore drilling. The presidents of ExxonMobil, BP America, Chevron, and Shell Oil testified before the House Natural Resources Committee in Washington. They're pushing Congress and the administration not to reenact a ban on offshore drilling that President Bush lifted last year. They also want to see more areas opened up, including in Alaska. Shell Oil Company President Marvin Odom says legal challenges are creating what he called a de facto moratorium off Alaska's coasts, even in areas where Shell has leases.
It's an area that's open to leasing, but it's currently being inhibited. So I think just for the committee to think about what could we do to that area, which is open, what could we do to help move that forward would be an important question.
Alaska Native subsistence hunters and environmental groups have voiced concerns about offshore drilling in the Beaufort Sea, saying development could harm marine mammals like bowhead whales. In November, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that more environmental studies were needed because the Minerals Management Service did not look hard enough at the possible negative effects of drilling. Shell is challenging the ruling, but in the meantime canceled its major exploratory drilling operation in the Beaufort. Odom said during a break in today's hearing that he wants to see Congress or the Obama administration take an active role in the permitting process so drawn-out legal challenges don't become a regular occurrence.
It's not a streamlining issue. It's more all the agencies of government working together in a coordinated fashion, sharing all the information, making sure that the environmental studies and other things are done very, very well and very completely, so that they can withstand all the challenge that they will naturally get. And so it's a matter of very high quality, but coordinated and efficient at the same time.
Odom says Shell has paid more than $2 billion for leases in the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas. Alaska Congressman Don Young did not attend today's hearing, even though he's one of the Natural Resource Committee's senior members. In the Capitol subway car after the hearing, Young said he didn't see the point of attending because he already believes Alaska should be open to offshore drilling.
What do we learn in a hearing like this, other than the fact that, you know, we ought to be developing offshore oil? And we have now had a series of leases in Alaska that have been held up in court, and I'm hoping the Ninth Circuit will make sure they're available, because this nation needs this oil. And whether the people want to recognize that yet, I don't know.
Today's hearing was part of a series on offshore drilling. 2 weeks ago, environmentalist and actor Ted Danson testified for the ocean protection group Oceana. Danson said he's concerned about coastlines in the lower 48 and in Alaska.
To also make sure that we look at the Arctic Ocean and have special consideration about opening up any more drilling sites there, because spills under the Arctic cap would be disastrous. You can't clean them up.
All of the oil company executives who testified today said they do believe renewable power should have a strong place in the national energy portfolio.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide coverage for Alaskans who are denied health insurance due to a high-risk medical condition. For example, a person who has diabetes and has been rejected by an insurance company will be accepted by ACHIA. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. Information is also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association.
Postal rates are increasing across the country on May 11th. It's part of the Postal Service's annual rate adjustments. Last year, rates increased by about 12%. But this May, some rural Alaskans will be paying over 50% more for large parcels. From member station KYUK in Bethel, Angela Denning Barnes reports.
Basically, the larger the item being shipped, the more the increase will be. Darris Macy is the manager of marketing for the post office in the Alaska District.
You do see, as you look, as the weight goes up, the increase in pricing has gone up significantly. I mean, the percent that it's increased over last year.
No one knows large parcels quite like rural Alaska, which relies on them every day for bypass mail. They get cheaper rates by bypassing the post office, and it includes everything from groceries to construction goods and nearly all items you buy at the store. Last year's postal rate increase was directly followed by raised ticket prices on the shelves. The bypass mail program started in the 1970s by former Senator Ted Stevens as a way to help keep costs down in the bush. But it's also lost the post office money, about $60 million a year, and the Postal Service has increased rates in recent years to try to make up the difference. Macy says the parcel post rates are increasing more than other rates because the current rates are only covering 80% of the cost.
So in general, the parcel post rates have increased more on a percentage basis than other rates because we were losing money on them, basically.
Alaska's new postal rates will depend on where the parcel is being shipped and the weight of the goods. The state has five different postal zones, but Macy says the increases are about the same. Taking Zone 3 as an example, which includes the Bethel and Fairbanks regions, rates are increasing from a low of 7% up to a high of 51%. Those rates are for a 2-pound package and a 70-pound package. A 70-pound item is going from $17.73 up to $26.82. Macy says customers are still getting a break on shipping large items because they continue to charge less per pound for them. And the rates are still cheaper than regular priority airmail.
Even though the price has gone up, it is still somewhat, I guess I would call it subsidized. It's not really government subsidized because it's subsidized by other parcel, you know, it's by other postal service rates that people generally pay across the nation. We don't get any tax dollars. So all the revenue that we bring in is from purchase of stamps or mailing items. And this parcel post rate is still, we're still operating at a loss.
Besides increasing rates, another change to parcel post this May will be getting rid of the non-machinable rates. Those are packages that have to be handled by people and not machines, including all parcels over 35 pounds. Last year, Stevens successfully argued that bypass mail should be exempt from this fee because the mail never enters a postal facility, and the Postal Service agreed. This year, the Postal Service is doing away with non-machinable rates altogether, and they will keep one rate for all parcels. U.S. Senator Mark Begich, who was in Bethel last week, says he hasn't seen anything in the legislature about the May increase, but he expects meetings on it soon.
It is something that's cleared on our radar screen now that the stimulus bill is out of the way.
The Postal Regulatory Commission, which is separate from the Postal Service, is taking public comment on the rate increases until Monday, March 2nd. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning Barnes.
The remote Aleutian Islands community of Nikolsky is pleased with an apparent change of heart by the state of Alaska. The small island community has had a couple of rough years with notoriously bad weather hampering fuel deliveries, resulting in enormous emergency delivery costs. Last year, the tribal council got federal funding to build a wind turbine to help offset diesel fuel expense. They also hope to heat a greenhouse the community had built for growing fresh produce. But the Alaska Energy Authority refused to help pay the cost of changing the control panel that would connect the wind power to the diesel plant, a cost estimated at around $180,000. Tribal Administrator Tanya Kyle says now, through the state's Renewable Energy Fund, they'll be awarded more than $400,000.
Which means we'll be able to complete the purchase of the new control panels, the installation, the road to the wind turbine. We'll also be able to put in thermal nodes at the school and the lodge to displace the heat, diesel heat, which means they'll be running off of the waste electricity generated and providing them heat so they'll be able to save money.
Kyle says they have not been able to use the greenhouse yet because they couldn't afford to heat it with diesel. But now they're hoping to grow green beans, carrots, tomatoes, onions, and lots of greens. She says they typically use 22,000 gallons of diesel per year for the power plant and around the same amount in heating fuel for homes each year. Because of the delivery problems, the village of 35 people spent $500,000 on fuel last year. Kyle says the community is hopeful that the wind turbine will cut that expense in half.
Although we do have new demands on the power plant, which is going to make the wind turbine, a functioning wind turbine, just better all around, at least for the diesel plant. It'll mean less parts to replace and, you know, less things breaking. So it'll take a lot of the pressure off just of the diesel plant.
Kyle says new communication systems and NOAA weather tracking infrastructure will draw more power. The lodge that hosts tourists and hunters also nearly doubles the power draw in the summer. She says there will be housing foundation upgrades as well as septic system improvement projects going on this summer as well, providing a much-needed source of income for residents. Technology exists that could bring cruise ships into compliance with the state's strict new pollution standards, but it hasn't been tested on the ships yet, and it could be too costly or large for maritime use. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Alaska's Department of Environmental Conservation wants to know whether it's possible for cruise ships to meet new wastewater discharge standards. So it hired Oasis Environmental of Anchorage to research existing and experimental technology. Environmental engineer Max Sweeney says the firm has had some success.
Yes, the technology exists, but the bridge to putting that land-based technology on a vessel, there's a lot of engineering and design issues and implementation issues that have to be resolved before it can happen.
Oasis presented its findings in a draft report, and it held a workshop in Juneau with researchers, manufacturers, and cruise lines to find out more. Some technologies are still in development, while others are being used on ships, but none, so far, meet new standards that go into effect in 2010. Sweeney says a solution may involve more than one of the technologies it identified. But he says it's not as easy as buying new devices and bolting them into place. Workshop participants estimated designing, installing, and testing new equipment could take about 2 years, and it would be expensive.
The biggest barrier would be just the space limitations on the ship, and how do you get that device on the ship and get all the power and to the device and to make it sure it operates correctly, because you don't want to spend, you know, several million dollars on a new device without having tested it.
Cruise ships already face strict standards for sewage, metals such as copper, and other pollutants, and state officials say their discharges are generally cleaner than those from municipalities. But terms of a ballot measure passed in 2006 require the stronger standards that will have to be met next year, and the cruise industry says it cannot meet all the standards. The legislature is considering an industry-backed bill allowing effluent mixing zones. State Water Division Director Lynn Kent says her agency will continue to look for new discharge controls, even if the bill passes.
The mixing zone regulations require review of the best available technology, so we'd have to continue to look at that. They also, the regulations require what's called anti-backsliding. We can't allow a cruise ship or another permitter to disengage from treating their effluent to a very high quality if they've already been able to achieve that.
Cruise lines plan to test new equipment on several ships, but representatives say there's no easy fix that can be installed in time, and workshop participants said no one is designing fleet-wide changes. Backers of stronger discharge limits say some of the technologies are promising, and they say it's too early to write off the possibility that ships can meet the standards. Oasis plans to release a final report in April. State officials say they will not endorse a particular technology. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting from Juneau.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Paul Korchin in Nome, Len Anderson in Anchorage, Ann Hillman in Unalaska, Angela Denning Barnes in Bethel, and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Andy Feit. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. John Prophet is our webmaster. Duncan Moon is our vice president for media production. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Grant Station, now offering several webinars each month. More information at grantstation.com. It's never too early to set expectations and goals for your child's education. The UA College Savings Plan provides opportunities that can help you reach your educational savings goals. Save in Alaska, study anywhere. There's more information available by calling 1-888-4 and then Alaska. This message sponsored by the UA College Savings Plan.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.